You are listening to the Mission Matters Podcast Network, where we amplify the stories of entrepreneurs, executives, and experts.
You're listening to the Serve Strong, Finish Strong podcast, the show for 40 and 50-year-olds pursuing their next adventure. I'm your host, Scott Kochenour, and I'm honored that you're listening. Emotional health. Oh my goodness. Sometimes we are so happy at times. There are times when we are so angry. Other times we are scared out of our wits and fearful. Other times we are completely and utterly nervous and anxious. What is it about these emotions? And can we understand them enough that they have no rule over us? Emotional health is one of the six hallmarks, which we will get into in a moment. But I want to introduce you to my guest. Her name is Kim Cordy, and she's a sensory perception and emotional management strategist. She's an author and a speaker and a coach. She developed a framework for identifying and managing emotions using concepts from cooking to help bring to life how emotions are constructed in the body. She's currently in the process of writing her second book called Yucky, Yummy, Savory, Sweet, Understanding the Flavors of Emotions. She's hoping that will be released in the fall of 2023. She currently lives in the wine country of Northern California with her husband and two fur babies. And I want you to know that we're going to be talking about planning for future emotions. What is that all about? How can you plan for future emotions? Emotions that you don't have today, but you will in the future. Well, we're going to talk about that. And we're also going to talk about three specific take-home tips that you can engage in right after the episode to engage in your own emotional health. So I'm eager to get started. Let's start the conversation with Kim, and thanks again for listening. Around here, we talk about six hallmarks of an epic fourth quarter. When you enter your 60s and 70s, you want to be looking at six things. How spiritually grounded are you? How about your physical fitness, your relational richness, your emotional health, your vocational alignment, and your financial freedom? But in this episode, we are here to talk about emotional health. And with me is Kim Cordy, who knows everything there is to know about emotions. And I'm really glad to have you on the call. Thanks for joining us, Kim.
Thank you, Scott. I love that vote of confidence. I can tell you I don't know everything, but I'm in constant search.
Okay. Well, that's the key. And I think we'll get into that curiosity in a minute. So one of the things that you promote is future planning for the future emotions. That's an interesting concept. I've never heard it before. It's always been emotional intelligence and how can you become a self-aware today and dealing with your issues today. But what do you mean by planning for future emotions?
Just like you pick one of those hallmarks was physical fitness, right? Mm-hmm. So your ability to take care of your body and to strengthen it will help you in the future when you're facing physical ailments, right? If you're in a car accident, who's going to fare better? A person who is physically fit or who isn't? So that's part of it. Well, if we're not emotionally fit and we're not planning by taking actions that make us more fit emotionally, I'm in my 60s. I just turned 60. My dad, since he got COVID last September till today, right now, he's in a skilled nursing facility. I have been through the gamut with him. And I can honestly tell you that if I had not been as emotionally fit as I am or have gotten to this point, it would have been a lot harder. And we don't know what's going to happen to us, right? We can't feel what we haven't experienced. We can imagine like what it would be like to have your parent in a situation, but we are creatures who we are because of, yes, our genetics, and mostly emotionally is because of our experiences. Yes, I do know that there's epigenetics and all that other stuff, but what we use is our experience to plan for the future, to make a decision, to react, and to identify our emotions. So this is why it's so important.
Speaking of identifying emotions, you've got a unique way of identifying emotions. Can you explain how you do that?
Yes, happily, because it's probably one of my most favorite things to talk about. When you look at emotions, you think like, oh, this is just a feeling that's going on inside of me, right? Well, yes, that's true, but there's a process to it. And I'm really all about process. And in all of my discovery, there is a theory that has a lot of foundation. It's called the theory of constructed emotions. And we construct our emotions using our past experiences, but that's based on perceptions. So all of the sensory signals, they're like ingredients in a recipe. So we have these ingredients that come in. I don't know if you've ever seen the show Chopped. It's on the Food Network channel. Mm-hmm. And you get these chefs, they open up this basket and here's all of these ingredients and they got to figure out what to cook. Mm-hmm. None of them prepare the same dish, but they're all using the same ingredients, right? And that's how we are. We receive sensory signals all the time and the brain has to do something with them. It makes meaning of it. And it's using all of our experiences to do this. And so when we're active in taking those ingredients and examining the recipes that I call it. So rice, it basically is a recipe that we have in our brain. And when we are proactive in creating new recipes or able to identify the recipes and say, you know what, I don't want to cook this emotion. I don't want to do this. We have that capability. We just don't know it. It's the difference between being a cook and a chef. A chef is proactive. And so this is what I'm about, helping people to be better able to identify and manage them and to be proactive and to take a role in creating their emotional experiences so that they have more recipes to fall back on. And it gives you greater distinction in your emotional experiences and it allows you to identify them. Because a lot of us just say, oh, I feel sad. Well, that's a broad spectrum. So it gives you definition.
So I'm thinking of the listener who owns his own business, spent the last 35, 40 years building this thing. It's up and running and he's approaching 60 and he knows that a day is coming when he's going to need to exit. What would you tell him to get prepared emotionally for the exit of something he spent more than half of his life building and creating?
It's the same situation in for that as it would be for me dealing with my dad or any other event in life. And that is being able to identify your emotions. Like, so if you've been a person, take it, like our parents we're close in age, generationally stuffing emotions. So you haven't really been able to identify them. So taking steps to learn to identify how you feel, and to be able to make those distinctions I talked about earlier so that you can identify and just feel it. People think like it feels bad, so I don't want to feel it. Mm-hmm. But if you feel it, you go through the experience and then it can go. It might show up every once in a while, but you've fully digested it. Otherwise, it just becomes like an undigested issue inside of your stomach. And so you might have all these emotions that you aren't able to identify or you don't know what to do with because you haven't had that skill set yet. So being able to identify how you feel and just feel it, that goes a long way in helping the entrepreneur who's letting go of a business, is selling a business, or just anybody in general. But we have more going on, right? At age 60, we have had more years of stuffing than not. So it's best to learn now how to see them, feel them, and let them go.
So you're talking about have the experience as though it was happening now and digest it, process it, feel it, let yourself imagine being sad.
Yes.
And feeling sad, feeling that loss. You know, my mother passed in 2020. My father's still living. Should I prepare for his passing? How do I prepare my emotions? How do I plan ahead of time for the passing, the eventual passing of a parent?
A basketball player will go through in their mind the events of a game, making a play. And they know that the body physically responds to it. Your brain is sitting in a dark room. It's more impactful when you are actually doing it. You have the physicality of it. So the preparation that you have for that could be overshadow or can overshadow enjoying the moment, right? Mm-hmm. Because you just don't know how it's all going to end up. Like, we like to predict how things are going to be. And that's really how our brain works. Like, everything that we do, think, see, like our eyes don't see, we're predicting. Like, as you look at me in Zoom, it's a prediction of the brain. And it's a hard concept to kind of get around. But when we're in that moment, it might be a little bit different. But I want to go back to this point of, as well as you can plan for something, and you think that you can plan, when you're in the moment, it might be different. It might be different than you planned. And you have to allow for that and not say, well, this isn't, you know, I can't feel this way because this isn't what I planned for. This was, you know, I was going to feel this way. And now all of a sudden, instead of feeling immense sadness, you feel a sense of love or relief for your parent. It's really, and I keep going back to this, but it's all about being able to identify in the moment in more detail how you feel. And it's the difference between, I like to say, having spaghetti recipes. If you call every recipe, oh, this is a spaghetti recipe. But there's so many different spaghetti recipes. So having that variation to understand, like, in any given moment, you could have different variations of a similar feeling, but that's slightly different, mm-hmm. and allow for it.
It's interesting. What's going through my mind, and I'll explain it at the risk of it being way off. Okay. If it's way off, then you just say that I have no idea what you're talking about. I love coffee. Okay. Right. I love coffee, and the third wave in particular. By third wave, I mean, you go to a coffee shop and you say, I'd like a pour over. And it usually takes 3, 4, or 5 minutes for them to make a cup of coffee. It's not instant. It's not just pour it out and there you go. That culture, the roasters of coffee, will put what are called tasting notes on the bag. You might be looking for orange, avocado, and hints of lime or whatever in your coffee. And in order to have the most appreciation for coffee, it's good to train your palate to be able to appreciate what that coffee was supposed to taste like. And if it was roasted right, you'll sense that. So if I want to pull out the avocado tasting note, then I'll probably want to have had avocados and paid attention to what avocados tasted like, whether it was bitter, sour, sweet, you know, whatever, so that I can recognize when I'm drinking the coffee, Now I taste the avocado because I've had avocado and I know what avocado tastes like. They say one of the best things you can do to appreciate a cup of coffee is notice when you're eating things, nuts, bananas, salad, and being cognizant, not just of eating, but how does it taste? And so you're slowing down and you're noticing what's going on. So that's what's going through my mind as you're talking about planning for your future emotions, is live the emotion now so that you recognize it when it pops up in a future event. Am I on base?
You are absolutely on base. And that's pretty much, you are absolutely on base. And in fact, it's almost like you've looked at my book already. The idea behind sensory systems and the sensory systems that we use for what we eat, for what we drink, for how we feel, they're all the same. And we have these receptors in the body. And when we have these experiences, we have these things that are produced by the brain, and they're called neuropeptides, and they're sent from the brain to the body. And it's only where there's a receptor for it, that feeling produced. So we just don't experience things. It's called interoception. So it's the experience of how we feel inside. And so we notice these different tastes, right? Like it's a flavor actually, because taste is a part of flavor, but flavor consists of all of your senses. What you see will impact how you, even what you hear can impact what you consume. All of our senses are part of eating. And it's also a part of feeling. So when you can taste your emotions, which is actually, like I said, part of the title actually of the book, you can actually identify them that much better. And what we have to understand is that if we saw avocado in the description, we're going to expect avocado in the flavor. But if we were blindly tasting it, can we capture the avocado? Can we taste it and say, oh, I get the flavor. I'm getting a hint of a nut. I'm getting this. And that's what happens with our emotional development when we increase our interoceptive capabilities, that ability to taste our emotions and understand the flavor of how we feel.
This sounds like an atomic element, an atomic aspect of self-awareness. This is like self-awareness to the deepest level, not just being self-aware generally so that you can regulate your emotions and deal with it in the moment. You're talking about really being aware of who you are and what's going on inside of you to a very deep level.
It is a deep level. That's the whole thing. I mean, when these neuropeptides, and actually the person who discovered these, the receptors for, let me take this back. There was a woman, Dr. Candace Pert, and she calls these neuropeptides the molecules of emotions, and they travel through our body. So yes, at an atomic level, in the atom, I mean, what do we have? DNA. And DNA is our storage, as far as no one wants to truly say that, but it really does store. Like, what do we get from our parents, their DNA? What is some of our likes and dislikes? It's that we have a talent. We get that from our DNA. And that's part of what makes up our emotions of what we want and what we don't want in life. And so, yes, it is a whole body event. People focus just on the brain. Well, guess what? That's a part of it. People focus just on their health, like gut health is so important. Yes, that's a part of it. But another really essential part of it is mood management. So emotions come in two different flavors. There's the homeostatic emotions, which are the feelings that we get when we're hungry, when we're sleepy, when we're sick. So it's telling us we need to do something to get our body back in balance, which is what homeostasis is. And then there's the allostatic emotions. That is the feelings that we have, the sadness, the happy, the what we refer to often as emotions. Like, we don't think of homeostatic as being emotions, even though they are. So these feelings that we have in our body, like I said before, being able to distinguish them, this is a skill. And it's just being in tune with who we are. And the higher awareness we have of that, the easier it is, the faster this knowledge comes to us, and the easier it is to work through it. The easier it says, oh, like, I am feeling like this week, I can even go back to last night, totally emotionally exhausted, very overwhelmed. And I just sat with it and just said, why I go through and feel like, why am I feeling overwhelmed? Yeah, I have got a good reason to feel overwhelmed. Got my rest and I'm right as rain today.
I can share an example. Just brought me right back to Canada. I went on a fishing trip with my dad and my son. And I was, for some reason, and my son was 7 or 8, maybe 9. I was terribly homesick. It was weird for being an adult to be so homesick, to just want to be home. And I can remember getting off the phone with my wife in the clubhouse and walking to the cabin, the fishing cabin, where my father and son were. And somehow I just decided inside to say, you're homesick. You're just plain homesick. Just let yourself be homesick. By the time I got to the cabin, I was fine, and I was fine the rest of the trip. I will always come back to that. And you've just highlighted what took place. Is I allowed the homesickness to have its say. And once it got a chance to express itself, It was satisfied. It no longer had its hold on me. And that's where I kind of got this idea that, you know, monsters shrink when you look them in the eye, and they grow when you turn your back on them. These emotions, when we stuff them, they're not going to just kind of go away on their own. They're going to show up somewhere else, right?
Absolutely. They do show up at more exhausting on the body and the mind when you do that. I can tell you, I was raised in a family of emotion stuffers. I kind of created an alternate reality. And in my late 20s, it was like my body burst and said, okay, no more of this. And it was a rough few years. And it really was the catalyst for me doing this kind of work, because it's like, wow, the difference between me in my late 20s and me, you know, even in my late 30s and then again in my late 40s, the more that I became connected to how I felt, the easier my life got and the better I feel physically. Like, I just, you know, I've got the creaks and cracks from being 60 that everybody else does, but I just feel better. I can't even describe to you the difference, because it's vast. And I attribute it tremendously to the fact that I now don't ignore them. I face them. I question them, because you know what? Feelings aren't facts. Sometimes you get them wrong. And it's because we've got these old recipes in our head that play, that can be wrong. Family recipes, things that happened a long time ago that have nothing to do with today. And so the ability to make that examination and say, yeah, you know what? I don't think this is a situation at all. It gets easier and easier and easier the more you do it.
There was a moment just yesterday. I made the distinction to say, I'm feeling this. I'm not this, but I'm feeling it. Like, let's just use an example. I can't remember exactly what I was feeling, but I do remember making the distinction that it wasn't identifying me. It's just what I was feeling at the moment. Like, for example, I am a failure versus I'm feeling failure currently. I'm feeling angry, but I'm not an angry person. I'm feeling it right now. Is that a valid thing to do?
100%. So when you say words don't matter, words matter. And what matters even more is the definition of that word as it means to you. And first, I just want to take that difference, because your brain, once again, it just knows what you feed it. And if the sensory information is coming from the outside world or from the inside world, it's receiving the ingredients. So your ears hear what you say, your internal hearing hears what you say. And if you use those words, I am, then that's who you are. You are a failure. You are a miserable person. If you say, I feel like a miserable person, well, what is a feeling? It can be processed. You can't change being a human. You are a human. You are a man. These are things that can't change. But what can change are feelings. So they're fluid. And it's a lot more overwhelming, I think, when you think of yourself as something versus a feeling. So yes, you're right. And then to what a failure means for you, we all have our own definitions of these. I love to take people through this exercise where you, like for you, I would say, God, what has to happen for you to feel like a failure? And I would ask you this over and over and over and over again. And then all of a sudden, you have a list of recipes that include failure, because like spaghetti, you have multiple. And then when you look at these, you see what failure means to you, even though what the dictionary says, you've got your list of what a failure is. And you got your recipes and you can find out like, oh, wow, like, I'm not a failure, or this is how I feel like a failure in these circumstances. So what can I do about that? Or can I not do anything about that? Is it really a failure? So it gives you that chance to examine it, because words have meaning for us each individually, and we can overuse them. We can dilute them. I love to use the word love, and I say love because it is a passionate thing for me. Love is vital. We need love to live. We know that human connection, which is an important part of your circle, it's so vital. And yet we will use love for t-shirts. Oh, I love your shirt. We will use love for, I love this detergent. In the movie Roxanne, there's a speech that's given where he talks about the dilution of love. And when you start to examine how you use the word love and to be more particular with it, you might find, as I did, because I tried this experiment by taking out the word love where I didn't really mean it in the sense of its most valuable thing to me. Like, do I love this? Like, I love my family. Do I love like the things that really mean a lot to me? And use other words. That's creating that definition that I was talking about earlier. So that spaghetti isn't just spaghetti, it's spaghetti with meatballs, it's spaghetti carbonara, it's all of these different things. And you can see the difference between love versus lust versus like versus Twitter-pated. I love Twitter-pated because it's that first flush. And so you can give yourself more definitions and greater diversity in your emotions, because emotional diversity is underrated.
Yeah. Yeah. I picked that up from our conversations prior to recording this podcast episode. Speaking of that, we did spend some time talking a little bit about three tips that you share for emotional health. I want to make sure that we give time for you to share those. Those are really good. So share, what are three tips that we can engage in for emotional health?
One of, I think, the most important things, in my opinion, is to move from fear to caution to curiosity. Fear engages for what people know mostly is the fight or flight. It's one of those things where it gears your brain to focus on the thing that's causing you fear. And fear is can be real or imagined. And I think that's an important point to remember. Like, just because you're afraid doesn't mean you should be afraid. But if you can go from fear, which is like cement on your feet, to caution. So caution means that you're willing to step forward. Imagine you're crossing a street. If it's got a lot of traffic, you know, you're going to be looking to make sure it's safe to cross. So you're proceeding with caution. So caution is where you're allowing yourself to look around a little bit more. Curiosity is when you say, and you question it, and you can say, well, what is it that's making me fear? And is there anything going on that is not fearful? Do I really need to be this? The opening of our mind to question how we feel and to believe that they are not facts allows us to be open to more experiences and also allows us to see the things that we are not focused on. So remember, the vision gets very focused when we are in a fear state, because that's how we're designed. We need to run from the tiger so we don't see all the trees in the forest or whatever else is going on. And when we're curious, we're opening up that viewpoint. So that's number one, going from fear to caution to curious. The second one is to check your mood. Now, I talked about the homeostatic emotions and those feelings that come because we are short of sleep. We need food. We're eating poorly. We're not getting the right nutrition. Those impact our mood. Study after study, research after research article will tell you that your mood will impact your emotion. How you respond in one situation, if you're in a good mood or a bad mood, or more specifically, if you're sleepy, if you are hungry, if you're just mulling over some conversation that you can do nothing about, or some situation that either has nothing to do with you or is just going on in your head and it takes your mood into a lower place, that's going to impact the next thing you feel. It just is. So mood management is really almost more important than what we think of as emotion management. So managing that mood. So check your mood and check your thoughts, because your thoughts, just like your feelings, don't necessarily have to be true either. And stick to really what's impacting you. And then lastly, acts of kindness. And when our mood is not great, there's lots of things we can do. We can go outside, being out in the fresh air, talking to someone, listening to something funny, but just doing an act of kindness can do so much, not only for you, but also for another person. And this can be just as simple as giving a compliment, noticing something on someone else. I read an article about why people are so mean, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that we are put down so much by other people. We just tend to do that. And the reason we put other people down is because we want to feel better about ourselves. So if we do the reverse and we make someone else feel better about themselves by just giving someone whom you would normally think ill of a compliment, changing the focus, finding something you like, and then they feel better and so do you. And it also helps to undo some of our inherent recipes that keep us in a state of thinking a particular way about a particular type of person based on maybe some old, outdated, and unwarranted recipes.
What a fantastic set of three things. We can all take the minute this episode ends, we can take action right now. I love that. Those are three tips, things that we can do right now to improve our emotional health. So if you're listening to this episode and you're thinking about how do I create an emotional healthy aspect to my life? When you hang up, when we're done with this episode, go find somebody and do something nice for them. Change your emotional health by looking at other people. Kim, you are an author. You've written one book. You're in the middle of another book. The book that you're working on right now, as I understand, it's called Yucky, Yummy, Savory, Sweet, Understanding the Flavors of Emotions. Sounds interesting.
Correct. Yes, it goes into much more detail as to the whole creation, the recipes that we have, how interoception works. I am one of these people that needs to understand how something works. And I know that this is not the end all be all of it, but I feel that it's relatable for people to connect to their emotions because it's using food. I mean, who doesn't have a meal and has a feeling about it, right?
Right, right. Yeah, you're taking something that we can all identify with and making inroads into understanding emotions. What's the title of your first book?
It's called The Perfect Heart, Creating and Maintaining Love-Life Balance. It was written a long time ago, and it was a foray into the whole getting connected to your focus and being focused and keeping your mind on things, that we create balance in our lives by maintaining what we need, identifying what we need in our personal relationships, and then making sure how we spend our time in those personal relationships is met. Because we tend to become unbalanced, and especially in long-term relationships, we lose track of the other person. We kind of take it for granted that they're always there, and we kind of lose that connection. And this is just a visual tool. It's a Venn diagram in the shape of a heart that you can use to identify the balance in your relationships today and as a tool for discussion in relationships. And also as a discussion point if you're dating, because not everybody wants the same amount of time in a relationship, you know, how they spend it. So that's what it was.
Interesting. About. Interesting. So if you want to improve your relational richness, that would be a good resource. Kim, somebody's listening to this and they're saying, where can I find Kim? Where can we find you and know about when the book, The Yucky, Yummy, Savory, Sweet, I love saying those, the four words fast. How do we know when that comes out? Where can we find you?
You can connect with me on Instagram at The Kim Cordy. LinkedIn, same, at The Kim Cordy, Twitter, at The Kim Cordy, and lastly, my website, which is just kimcorty.com, kimkorte.com, and I will be posting as it gets closer, but I'm almost done with the first draft, so I'm thinking fall time. Mm-hmm. It'll be ready, and I will be busy on the promo mode for sure.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, this has been very enlightening. And I'll tell you, the thing that I like most about what you're doing is you're helping people go from being controlled by their emotions to being in control, to having a sense of agency by understanding what's really going on. And that's a very powerful thing to have, is agency. So I appreciate your time, appreciate the effort that you're putting together to help other people understand their emotions. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Scott. And I really appreciate taking the time to interview me. I love your podcast. So it was quite the pleasure.
That's very kind. Thank you.
And I said the word love and meant it.
This has been another episode of the Serve Strong, Finish Strong podcast. I take your time very seriously. Therefore, my pledge is to continue bringing you information and insight you need to be successful in your adventure as you finish strong. Be sure to check the show notes for the information related in this episode. Subscribe to be notified when new shows drop and leave a review if you're so inclined. I'll talk to you next time.
This has been a Mission Matters Network production. Listen to this show and browse our entire catalog by visiting missionmatters.com.